Get started. This is the board discussion agenda. Am I on here? Probably not.
No, I don't.
Are we taping?
Has nothing to do with the water.
Yes, we are. We're on tape. As we speak, you don't need to have the microphone on in order to be recorded.
It goes on the bottom.
This is...
Push on underneath.
All right, we'll start again.
Test.
Underneath.
This is the general board discussion.
Hold it in for a minute, and then let go.
For December 9th. Benefit of board members, what we have typically done. This is our kind of informal discussion where we can bring up pretty much anything we want. Some things are placed on the agenda, but it doesn't have to be on the agenda for you to talk about it. We usually take turns. We ask that you, every time your turn comes around, just speak to one issue. You may have several. That way it gives everybody at least... We always usually have plenty of time for these things, but we just ask everybody to keep to one issue at a time until it comes on. Since I'm listed first on the agenda, and apparently my number one item is meeting setup procedures for some reason. this was, and I do have, I had a handout on it, but I didn't bring it, so I didn't realize it was on it, but we had a resolution, the early part of this year, wasn't it, Ms. Stang? In 2014?
Yes.
Yeah. Where I went through and kind of is it in our policies or procedures manual whereby we say there is a set procedure. It's not all just flying by the seat of our pants as to what type of meetings are going to pass it around. What type of meetings are televised, which are taped, things like that, and also the room, how the room will be configured. So I guess the only thing we need to do is make you aware of that. If there's anything, as we go through it the first time, if you go through the first workshop through this, if there's anything that you think's not functional, not efficient, you have an idea, please feel free, bring it up, things like that. But just understand that the way we're going through now is kind of what is in our policy. It's not just... Judy decided to set the room up like that at that point. Okay, and I don't know if there's anything more to be said at this point.
You have a question about
the
room setup?
Yeah, absolutely.
Any way you can get the citizen input speaker out of the center of the center aisle there and put them over on the side? It's kind of ridiculous. Somebody's speaking as a citizen input, and all you see is their rear end. And, just put it over on the side or one side or the other.
I don't think we had it off to the side at one point, didn't we?
We used to.
Why did we move that?
I guess my understanding would be why it was moved back to the center room at the time was that the person was speaking to the board. I think the idea was the citizen input was you were coming specifically to speak to the board.
Same thing happens at the county commission, and they have theirs on the sides. And I think it's not professional to have it in the center like that. But that's just a...
No, it's something. I don't think that's something that we need to do anything fancy about. We can just
do it right.
Absolutely.
I need some input, though, Ms.
I could tell you that City of Sebastian has the same way we have, but I agree with you. All you see is somebody's back end, and it's. I don't think it's. It could be improved on. So I think that wouldn't be.
We could just move it over.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You'd still see their backside.
Because
we could angle it.
Yeah.
One of the reasons for that was because it became grandstanding. It became people gesticulating
to the crowd,
mm-hmm. and it just creating a very negative feeling sometimes, or positive if it was a positive comment. Mm-hmm. And that way you try to neutralize it a little bit because they are talking to the board,
right.
And so people that like to hear themselves speak. May be discouraged from doing so because they have to look at the board and not at their the folks that come in to support them. But that's a very personal thing.
We can't take a vote on this, but if we can get enough people want to do it, we can
procedures.
Move it tonight.
It's procedures.
I see some head nods.
Yeah. Well, we're not voting.
No, we can't vote, but we can. Poll the board.
Sure, you can't poll the board, but that's a general consensus. This is a procedure, right?
The chairman says we're going to move it tonight.
You darn right we are. unless somebody has a problem, we can go ahead and make that magic happen. All right, we'll move on. Mr. Shears, do you have an item?
I went to the same school that some of the other folks went to, and two things stuck out in my mind that, and I'm going to try with, if we can get the board's approval too, since I'm going to be the legislative liaison, I want to try to work with the legislature to try to have us do the ethics training, change from 4 hours a year to maybe 1 hour of an update or whatever. I just don't think it's required or necessary for us to have 4 hours of ethics training every year, new or old board member. If we have a new board member come on, maybe the 4 hour training session is good. The expense that we put in that, everybody or a lot of folks going over to the meeting over there is probably good, but I want to try to work to eliminate that 4 hour per year ethics training. The other thing that I picked up from the meeting over there is that apparently this 119 things, when people call in for information and they want to get it right now, I don't know if the board or the district has a procedure for handling that, and if we have just one person to respond on those, or do we have a process so that if someone calls in to a secretary and asks for something, they can get that information to the person that disperses the 119 request or handles those. Apparently, that's getting to be a real big deal. People are suing us and all, but not us, but different folks for not being able to comply immediately with the 119 request. And I don't know if we have a procedure in place, but I would like to have a procedure in place. And for one, I would like to know who that person is that handles 119 requests. And if our folks haven't been trained on that, I think it would be wise for us maybe to even have a couple of kind of like mystery shoppers. You know, just make a call and just check it out and see. Because, you know, I treasure the tax dollars that I paid to this district, and I don't want to waste it on some, nothing to lawyers, but to some lawyers from somewhere else that are just trying to cause us problems. That's two of the things that I picked up over there, and apparently they're huge deals, and I hope we can find out what the issues are. And get them and have that process in place. And Sean and I may not know who to contact if we get a 119 request.
Sean may not even know what a 119 request is.
All right, let's do one issue at a time in terms of, you were bringing it up just to go with the ethics. Are you looking for some kind of guidance from board members?
Well, I want to get that from the board, because I can't do that by myself. I have to speak on behalf of the board.
No, Ms. Menace?
Actually, I was at the training too, and that was exactly what I was going to bring up. So what they talked about was making sure that we know who determines if it's personal or public once the investigation starts. So who is
the
public records request?
Okay.
So number one, who in the district, Dr. Adams, who is the district
Brenda
person?
Brenda Davis.
So that's the person who handles it.
So anybody that calls into the district is referred to her.
So that's Brenda Davis.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have a flow chart with procedures as to how Ms. Davis does that?
Well, I don't think you have a flow chart, but we do have a process in place by which she, and she has received some training as well. We have a form. We take this very serious because we get hundreds of requests. Mm-hmm. She logs all of the requests that she gets. She keeps pretty copious information, so she can provide somebody who wants to know what the public requests have been, she can provide that information. So we do have a process in place. She actually had started when she was in a different office, and when she came into superintendent's office, kept it. And so we're glad to provide you with any information, but we do keep records. We receive, it's just very surprising how many public records requests you get today. And if she has any questions regarding information that goes out, she asked, she may email our school board attorney to ask for some direction on that. But we're pretty cautious and...
Do all the people in the district, are they all aware of Brenda Davis? And if they, if a secretary at Dearbridge High School gets a call, is she, does she know to just forward that call right to Ms. Davis?
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, what I would say is any call that comes in here, they know it goes directed to her, but I would not say that everybody in the district would know that. I think that's a...
I would think that it would be really good to make sure that everybody knows Brenda Davis.
Yeah. And the other thing is schools do not... All the public records requests come to the district office, come to that person. So we don't want several people trying to address public records requests. So it all gets channeled back to us, but
the times are the essence whenever they call. And there's a certain time certain that they have to get their... we have to get back to them, I think. I'm not sure what it is, but
I think it depends on the request. Would you mind if Suzanne spoke to
that? No, I think this is discussion.
Sure. What the law requires is once a government or someone that holds public records receives a request for them, the records custodian needs to immediately at least acknowledge receipt of it. So there's an immediate communication. If it comes in after 5 o'clock, of course, no one's going to be here to immediately respond. So there is some reasonableness attached to it. After you have that acknowledgement of the public records request, the law says you have a reasonable amount of time to respond. And that's going to be on a case-by-case basis. If they're asking for a copy of the calendar on your desk, it's 2 seconds, here it is. If they're asking for boxes of emails or boxes of documents from the 1800s, it's going to take a little longer. So you have to look at the actual request, the voluminous nature of the documents involved, and then you move accordingly. And then also I'd like you to speak to, sometimes there's costs associated with requesting that information, so I think that's important information as well.
Absolutely. Depending upon what's requested, sometimes people just want to come in and look at something, and there is no charge just to come in and look at a piece of paper. But if the request is to review a personnel file, there's information in a personnel file that's otherwise confidential, and so the records custodian spends some time to redact out Social Security numbers, bank account information, perhaps medical information. May need to be removed. So that it's called administrative costs. If there's an inordinate, the law is not that clear, inordinate amount of administrative costs involved or administrative time involved in responding to a public records request, the district is allowed to charge the actual labor cost for the individual doing that work. Additionally, if someone asks for a copy, a photocopy of a document, you can charge 15 cents per one-sided sheet and up to 20 cents per two-sided sheet for it. If for some reason it's on a disc and they want a copy of the disc, you can charge, you know, the cost of the disc to give them that piece of plastic with the information on it. The same thing for photographs or large, you know, diagrams. You charge actual costs. So there are some costs that you can charge. And I know Brenda has a process in place where she does her best ability to estimate, so you give people an idea of how much it will cost if it is a large public records request. And depending upon who it is, I know sometimes she asks for a deposit before she starts the work, and sometimes she'll do the work and then they'll pay when they come to pick it up. So I know she has a process in place for that sort of thing as well.
And as well with the information that she gathers in terms of logging the request and who it's also, she notes if there was any cost to that. So we have that history, you know, that as well.
Ms. Ryan?
Yeah, so what if whatever is requested is information that the district has access to, but hasn't processed, if you will, if it's a document that doesn't exist. If somebody says, I want to know how many students wore pink shoes on Tuesday, you know, it doesn't exist, but you definitely keep track of who wears pink and on what days. But you don't make a document out of it.
Using that example, where you've said we somehow track that information. Let's assume it's a database, but we haven't printed the report. We still have to allow access to the information. So it may be a process where you ask the IT department to come up with a query into your database to pull that information. but you can charge for the time it takes to write the query or to code the query, and you charge for that. And if it's 200 sheets of computer paper spitting out of the printer afterward, you can charge, you know, for that paper, if you will. But let me put a finer point on it, if I may. The Public Records Act, the Florida law, does not require an interview. It requires the production of public information. So the person who wants to know about the pink doesn't have the right to demand that the principal at the school sit down and explain the pink shoes. They just have a right to the public records. And that's a lot of times the discussions that I have with folks is, you don't have to grant an interview, but we have to see if we've got a public document. So perhaps rather than the principal sitting down for the interview, we just need to write the query into the database to pull the information.
And one of the pieces, we're still on the public record.
Yeah.
Okay. Do we have a form or something that people have to fill out to get a public record?
I don't think they have to, yeah. But if they come in, sometimes people will, you know, initial. Sometimes people come in directly to Brenda. I have to sign off on any information that goes out, and it's on a form. So what she does is she fills out, here's who asked for the information, and, you know, may have an attachment to it, and I'll sign off that that information has been given out.
Understood.
But they don't have to fill out.
It's not, it, we can't require that.
Yeah, we don't require that.
That's correct.
Don't call through. Nor do we have to require a name. John Doe, is my understanding.
Right.
It, can come into the lobby and just say,
anonymous.
You don't need to know who I am, but this is what I need to know, and my oral's good enough. And the other thing I want to say, because I did this for, I was a record specialist, but it's all changed. That's why, on your ethics thing, that's why I believe that's the law. We have to have the 4 years every year in case the new legislation, to include new legislation, but the... We don't create records that aren't there. If we have AT&T billing, or Verizon, I think that's who we have, for our phones, and they don't have itemized, and they just send us a monthly list, and this is for this phone number, this is the bill, and they don't have the itemized, it's my understanding, and that's what I want to ask you, that if somebody asked me, and maybe I'm using a bad example, but let's say we don't have an itemized list from an outside vendor, we do not go back to the outside vendor and have them create a record. We just say, this is all we have. And also by saying, because I get them all the time, the other place, is if somebody says, I want 3 years of purchasing, you know, all your purchase orders for 3 years, a good reason to go back and give them the estimate is to say, that's going to be at $15 an hour for a, you know, a data entry girl, you know, 8 hours, which is going to be this, and I'll need a deposit. Oh, well, only give me 6 months. You know, so that's a lot of reason why we do the estimate first. Mm-hmm. But it's my understanding, right, we do not create. Like you said, if you can hit a button and our software can give us that data and it's written for that data, we can do it. But we don't create software and or new records to create. If we don't have a thing that we can't press that every kid wore pink shoes, we can't give them that data. But if we have a button we can press to do that, we can do
or
that.
Because having worked in the report writing field for a while and the information software, there is a great deal of cost, especially after speaking with Mr. Green with our current system. And it's not like they use SQL Server.
Right.
They use COBOL,
right.
Which is
yeah.
Yikes.
Mm-hmm. We're getting there.
I agree. But there are very real costs, and those report writers are not easily
right.
found, and nor is it a very user-friendly to create the pink shoe report. I mean, it would probably cost the requester tens of thousands of dollars to get a pink shoe report. My question is: does the phrase "readily available" apply at any?
No, sir.
No. Okay. As long as it lives in our database somewhere, it's
back in the 1800s, you got to go find it if you have it.
Okay. Thank you.
May I respond to,
yes,
to Mrs. Simchek?
To clarify that.
And still using the pink shoe example, if we do not maintain information on who wears pink shoes, we do not
that,
have
that
to try
create
and create something. Correct.
Yeah.
You do not have to go do the research for someone.
There may be data there, but it may not be in a format that you can give it to them, so you create a format that which you can get it because you have the data.
Right. If you have the pink shoe data.
So that's why it takes time.
Push the button. If you don't have pink shoe data, we don't have anything responsive to your request.
So in the event that there's a public records request, and for example, emails have to be collected, who is the person that determines if those emails are personal or public? You know, they're when they make that.
Well, I would say if they're on your computer, they're public. Doesn't, you know.
Can I go one step further?
Well, the reason I ask that is because at the ethics workshop, they are public only if it's business related. So their need, I'm just trying to understand, you know, what I'm hearing is that Ms. Davis receives these requests, there's some kind of a process in place, she dates it, she gets back in a reasonable amount of time, but it's information that exists. What if it has to be redacted, and what if somebody has to determine if it is actually business related or not? Who would do that? Is that Ms. Davis' role to redact and determine if it's public or private? You know,
thinking that she's the one that has to go through all of that, and
she has in the past.
She gets the information from the source, you know, in IT, okay, and then it has to be reviewed.
It's my
and
understanding.
Redacted.
Anything on this computer at this work is public. It's the, we have to decide, even though it's on my personal, when I pay for this phone, I write school board business on here, and there's a public records request, it is my ethical, and I could be charged if I don't produce that. At a later date, somebody finds an email that was sent from my personal, and I said there was no business taking, if I'm correct, no, I don't have any emails for business to Mr. Smith. Never wrote Mr. Smith an email from the school board URL address. It doesn't matter the URL, it's the content. So the person who determines that content is each one of us, because if that records request comes in and it asks us, did you ever email Mr. Schumann, do you have any emails to Mr. Schumann regarding something on the agenda, and maybe I don't have any here, but I have one on my personal, that is a public record. And so sometimes, to answer your question, we determine, because the school doesn't have that information. Am I correct? That's why you should choose where you put your stuff. And that's the short version.
Any information that a school board member makes or receives in the course of official business for the school board is a public record. Okay, that's kind of the broad definition. It doesn't make any difference where you receive it. Publix, when you're shopping for groceries, it could be on your personal email, it could be a personal text message. If it has to do with school board business, it's a public record. And if it's not somehow attached to the school district computer server system, my recommendation to you is to make it attached to the school board computer system so that you are not an individual records custodian, because that can be nightmarish to have someone call you and say, I need all your public records on your personal computer. Just automatically put them on the school district. If it happens to come into your personal, forward it to your school district account so that it's all captured there. Okay, but if I may, Mr. Chairman,
go ahead.
Two distinct issues were brought up, and I'm not sure we're getting a good explanation with regard to redaction. Brenda Davis handles redaction. From time to time, she will ask, "What about this? What about that?" Public, not, and so. She does handle redactions for the district. But let me address personal information. personal information of a school board member, you know, the email that you might send, honey, don't forget the dry cleaning, pick up the milk, don't forget the kid at school, you know, those types of communications have really nothing to do with school board business, believe it or not. They're personal to you. Those are not public records, okay? So technically, if a public records request comes in for all of Mr. Froth's emails for the past blank days, and some of those emails include something to your spouse saying, don't forget the milk on the way home, that doesn't have to be produced as a public record, okay? But procedurally, what I have experienced, the process that's in place here in this district is it goes. Because Brenda does not go personal business. She gets 200 emails and she's scanning for redactable information. Everything else goes. That's the process that has been used here. The same thing with retention. It's my understanding in speaking with folks in the IT department here, your computer system automatically retains everything in your email account. Spam, weight loss stuff, all those emails that we all get in our it's all retained on your server because no one is going through and saying junk business, personal spam. Nobody's filtering those into categories. So if a public records request comes in for all Mr. Frost's emails, everything is going to be produced, but some information may be redacted. There's a social security number or a student's name is in there or medical information, that sort of thing. That is my understanding of the procedure that has been put in place here in this district.
Can I just offer for me, and I'm sure everybody can, I have, because we all get elected, you know, now they have our personal, and I have had this happen twice so far in the last year. One was an Audubon guy, sent me personal email. I forward it to the school district email and then answer from them and explain why I'm answering so that I can truly say that all email information. I have had a couple of phone calls on my personal, but then I take the school board phone and call them back. So that I have a clear, definitive, so that I'm not taking a year's worth of personal phone call bills and redacting 998.99 just to show that I had two. Then I could say, you know, it just didn't happen. You know, so because that's what happens with, as you said, we're in Publix, we're in whatever, and they know us outside of here, and they have their special number, and it just, now you've opened it up where if there's one, there might be 10, and so. With that ethics training that you mentioned, that gets crazy. And I did want to also say that I did take the ethics on one of the conferences. There's a lot of good things over there. But for the last 2 years, for me, it was online. And it was really good online. I have to say this year's was better than last year's. And it was $155 online.
Mm-hmm. Didn't have to answer the questions.
That's the worst thing. You have to demonstrate mastery. Yeah. See, even you don't like the assessment.
Because you have to demonstrate mastery.
That's right.
You have until December 31st, Mr. McCain. I guess I'll be hearing from you on December 20th. Where do I go again?
How do I get an extension?
Every day.
Okay. Anything more on that?
Thanks. Oh, I don't think she answered his question about the... I just think
was there a missing question?
Yeah,
sorry!
The legal... No, is it a legal requirement for the 4 years? I mean, for the 4 hours every
it
year.
Is today.
Yeah. Yes, it's a statutory requirement.
Seriously, was, I don't want to speak for you, but you were asking, would the board be
amenable to allowing me to speak with our legislative delegation about attempting to get that change from 4 hours every year to maybe 1 hour every year.
Oh, sure.
And that wouldn't be quite as bad on December 31st when Matt
Andrea Messina.
With new board members, you're saying 4 hours
four
is
hours.
Appropriate.
Yeah.
But
you know, one time when you've had that, and even the guys who were giving the course over there, I mean, they were just saying, you know, here it is up on the board. I mean, this is kind of ridiculous for us to be here for 4 hours of training, but we've got to do it. Sign in at 2 hours and sign in at the second 2 hours. So,
if you can make that magic happen.
Yeah. To get
is anybody
discussed.
Else? Yeah, absolutely. Does anybody else have any thoughts on that? Okay. We have three head
nods. I didn't hear that.
All right, Ms. Jimenez.
Yeah, I'll just go with that. With the first item, this is a resolution that was brought up at the Florida School Board Association, and it's basically about making sure that all school districts are on board in terms of fulfilling the statutory requirements of African American history instruction. And some school districts have made it a resolution, like we did with the accountability resolution. And as your FSBA liaison, I feel compelled to, everybody got it emailed. Judy emailed it to everybody. I sent her the document. So I just wanted to make sure that we discussed it and decided or not, or there was any consensus about passing a resolution relative to this. So you all received the document. So, it's an opportunity for conversation.
I have a question because I did read it before you put on the agenda. And just because I still have a young one in school, it's in statute, and do you feel that we're not doing it? Because I think we are just based on what my kids bring at home.
Right. And actually, curriculum and instruction they actually have gone out to schools and, asked for some feedback. And so they probably would have something to share with us. But it's also in standards. Mm-hmm. It's required as part of the standards in the various areas, social studies areas in particular. So it is built into the standards, and we have asked for some feedback from the schools. So that's a non-issue in terms of what we're doing in the school district. I thought it was rather unusual that we got a resolution, on a specific area, but I don't have concerns about it.
That was just my thought, that if you don't have any concerns, and I believe in action, not resolutions, the resolution's not as good as the paper you write it on. I don't see a need, but I would not, if it was consensus, to do it, but I just think that's fluff. I'm not into fluff. I'm into asking the superintendent, how are we doing? Mm-hmm. How are we doing? And if you say we're doing okay, that's where the changes come.
If they generate a specific report, I could send it out to you so you could have some information.
Mm-hmm. So for me, the question always becomes, does it make a student's life better? And I'm not big on photo op or resolutions or things like that. I just want to do the business of the people. And if the board were to think this would make a student's experience any better, I'd be for it. But it seems like more window dressing.
All right. Ms. Simchick, do you have anything?
Well, actually, October 7th, I had put on volunteer lists based on a letter for the Freedom from Religion. We discussed it, and the chair at the time had said, really discuss it with your new board, and I thought I put it on a tickler, so when I called Ms. Stang, Mr. Frost had put it on, so I'm going to defer to Mr. Frost, because it's probably the same thing.
from the gentleman from Sebastian. It was as part of my onboarding process. This was Ms. DeGresta and I spent a couple hours together, and this was one of the items which we addressed or discussed. I shouldn't say we didn't really address anything. My understanding of it is simply that we have an organization that takes umbrage with us having an invocation at the beginning, or would prefer that we not have it for some reason. And unless I'm misreading their letter and intent, puts us in a position of possible legal action at some point down the road. So I thought that we should perhaps address it and whether we want to look at a systems approach of how we go about doing things to make certain that it isn't an issue with the Establishment Clause, that we're not saying that this is the official religion of the school board. But at the same time, we are elected by our community, and we have certain values, and it is my responsibility, I feel, to represent those values, and I would feel very uncomfortable making that change at this time. So I wasn't privy to the last discussion, so I'd like to know where that was left. And also, it's also our responsibility to keep the district out of court and to minimize risk and things along those lines. So I just thought maybe we'd discuss it as adults as to how we can do this, perhaps, in a way that moves forward.
I know Ms. Simchek has some thoughts. Do you, would you like to share those now, or do you want, would we
well,
like
yeah,
to
I would
probably hear from Suzanne at some point?
Sure,
as to
sure. And that was really
where
I went. I went right to, which I want to say thank you to our attorney. When I get quandaries like this, I immediately go to the attorney and ask her, what is the liability? I have had people from, since that conversation and since that, people say, hey, I heard you got a letter. What are you going to do about it? They want us to have the invocations. So I said, I'm waiting for, you know, the new board.
Right.
But at the time when I talked to our attorney, that the, what, you know, there was no law, if I remember, no lawsuit has been done in the state of Florida, and that the liability would be if we had a Catholic priest every Tuesday doing that. But if we, as we have in the past, rabbi, and I know that nice young man, pastor so-and-so, Father John, Saint Sebastian, yada, you know, and you have in a list that you're actively, you know. Now, I've also been on legislative boards where we've had a moment of silence, but that would be a change for this board. I have no problem keeping what we had, you know, moment of silence for people to, you know, meditate to whomever. But I have had the public since that conversation and since I had it say, you're not going to change it, are you? So my thing is to limit liability. And again, we would like, so everyone can hear from the attorney, how she told me that we would keep our process but make sure that we are doing, which was to have a secure rotation list that someone perhaps was calling off of, so that we have observed every possibility. And I do want to make sure that everybody also knows that doesn't mean that we can't add the Muslim something something, you know. So when we say open, we say open to everything. So that's the discussion we can have. And also, I do think that the attorney could probably clear up how we can ironclad that lawsuit.
All right. I know you see, Claudia, but let's hear from Suzanne first, if you don't mind.
No, not at all. And I tried to send out a couple different times the documents, the letter that I prepared, as well as the letter from the Freedom Film Foundation, so that folks could just refresh themselves as to what the discussion has been at this point. Essentially, the Freedom From Religion Foundation does not like the fact that school boards, and I don't want you to think that they're just focused on you. Other school boards in the state also received the same letter or a similar letter complaining with regard to the invocation at the beginning of a school board business meeting. And what the law tells us is, you know, whether you agree with it or not, but courts in other states have determined already that city meetings and county meetings and state legislative meetings are different than school board meetings. And for whatever reason, courts in other states have found that school board meetings are focused on families and students. And they tie that into the other set of laws or the other court decisions out there that say school boards can't pray with students. You can't force religion on a student. You can't, in a public context with regard to public education, you can't insert prayer, if you will, into that public education process. So there's that line of cases. High school graduations, we can't force students to pray. All types of school-related functions, we can't force prayer on students. With the other set of cases out there that says state legislators can have an invocation before they commence their deliberations. City council, county commission, airport authority, other types of local governments don't have those same restrictions. And there's cases here in the state of Florida that lay that out. So we have these two kind of competing views, if you will. But here in our jurisdiction, we haven't had a court here decide that question for us or give us any guidance. I laid out in my letter four examples from other parts of the United States where courts have made those decisions, and they found that prayer or invocation at the beginning of a school board business meeting was unconstitutional for a lot of different reasons. And I mentioned to Mr. Frost earlier, one of those cases is because the school board admitted they violated the Constitution. So, you know, of course they lost. I find these cases to be very fact-specific. So we have those other states and those other decisions. Then after all of that, we have the U.S. Supreme Court fairly recently decided a case, the Town of Greece case. It was a town, not a school board. But there were a couple of provisions, a couple of sentences, if you will, in that decision that mentioned students. That the mere fact that students come to be recognized at the town meeting doesn't somehow prohibit them from having an invocation. So there was a little opening of a door of, well, maybe it wouldn't now be found to be constitutional as long as we had a very open volunteer process, a very open whoever would like to come to do the invocation is welcome to come, and it's not an individual elected official giving the invocation, it's someone, a volunteer from outside, who then comes in to provide it to the board. I think there's a legal argument to be made that you can, as long as you have a defined process that is open to all, to have an opportunity to be that volunteer. The Freedom From Religion Foundation, I'm sure, doesn't agree with me. They have been making themselves known here in the state of Florida. I don't know that they're about to file a lawsuit, but I don't know that they'll refrain. They may. I don't know that they're going to pick you. They may pick others that they have also sent letters to. I want to be upfront with you. No matter what you do, you may get sued. I'll put it that way. You go one end or the other, you may be facing some sort of a challenge from both ends of the spectrum. So, not an easy decision for you. But I think as long as you have that open discussion amongst yourselves, do you want to change your meeting procedures, the components of your business meetings? Do you want to change it, yes or no? If the answer is yes, then talk about how you would change it. If the answer is no, you wish to leave your components there, including your invocation, my recommendation is that we put forth a procedure in writing. And I would say we model it after the U.S. Supreme Court case where they approved the procedure with Town of Greece. There's a City of Lakeland case where the City of Lakeland's process of coming up with a list of invocation volunteers, that was upheld. So there are some examples, not school boards, from other local governments where they have processes where courts have upheld them and said they were nice and open. And that so we put something like that in place here. So at least we have a written process to then Ms. Stang can follow in coming up with the volunteer list and coming up with folks to show up and provide that, you know, to you at your board meeting. I think there are legal arguments on both sides of this. I'm not going to tell you that you're going to lose if you get sued. There are legal arguments, especially the Supreme Court case. But I'm not saying that 100% we're going to win. I don't know what a court would do here in Florida. I know what other courts in other states, and they've all said no. I don't know if that would happen here in Florida.
Ms. Menez?
Thank you, Ms. Duper. I think it's fascinating that you have court precedents that will support or not this particular situation, so it could be argued either way. Personally, the way I see this issue, actually, this would be a wonderful opportunity to make a change. And I would really like for our school district to have a moment of silence. I think one of the challenges we face in our modern society is that we are increasingly diverse. We are Vero Beach, in Indian River County is increasingly diverse. And one of the things that is hurting our nation is the lack of acceptance of the variety of perspectives, including religious perspectives, that abound in our country and in our community. And I think that just because we've done things the same way for many years doesn't necessarily mean that that is the best way to do business, especially when our community is much more diverse today than it has been in the past. So I understand when we as board members say that we reflect the values of the community. Absolutely we do. But we have to ask ourselves, are we reflecting the values of all of our community or just the people that we know that share the same mindset that we do? And I believe that as constitutional officers, our job is to be the voice for everyone in our community, whether or not we agree with their perspectives, personal, theological, ideological, whatever that may be. And for that case, for that reason, and because, you know, there could always be, if these folks are active and they're looking for situations where they could file a lawsuit, I think that for that reason also, we would be better off just having a moment of silence that honors the diversity of our community and shows that we as a board are accepting and open-minded about the religious traditions that all of our students bring to our schools. We've had issues in the past with our Jewish students where we inadvertently have not been mindful of when their holidays are, and the, you know, and so we have to, you know, put aside sometimes our own issues. We don't compromise our integrity by respecting the diversity in our country. So I know that this is a minority opinion, and I'm perfectly fine with it because I understand I serve on a board where we rule by consensus, but I do think that it's important for someone on the board to be the voice of those who are not represented in our makeup.
Sure.
Recollection of this matter was that our country is a, no matter what the President of the United States says, this is a Judeo-Christian nation. And I think that it is a disservice to this community for us to eliminate the prayer at the beginning of our meeting to give us strength and guidance to make the right decisions to represent all of our folks. And it just, whether it's been the procedure for since 1776 or whatever, I think it still behooves us to continue having the prayer before the meeting. We need all the strength we can get, by the way, to handle the decisions we make. But from the legal side, on my own, I have already made contact with Liberty University, and they will, if we are sued, they will handle all the lawsuit for us. And they have a record of winning. They are a strong Christian group. Matt Staver, he's been here a number of times in our community. And the one that I haven't made contact with yet, and this is on my own now, not a board thing, but the American Center for Law and Justice have indicated on one of those television stations, and I don't want to show any partiality there, but it's one that I listen to a lot, but that if you get sued by a group like this, just call us up and we will defend you. We will defend you. So, you know, we can say what we want to. I think in looking around at our country, I think we need some prayer. And our students need some prayer. We need some, with what's going on today, prayer may not solve the problems, but I'm telling you, it's a marvelous thing to have in your back pocket. And we need to have that. But the other issue that they talk about in this thing is that we don't want students and children to hear prayer. But, you know, I may be old-fashioned, but I think probably we need to have them hear some prayers. If that's the issue that we need to have a policy on, don't open those back doors until those students, don't let the students in until after we get all of this serious praying over with. Don't bring the color guard in if we can't handle Pledge Allegiance to the flag. I guess that's a problem. But I think we can do it. We've got three veterans here that I think we know how to, military veterans, by the way. I want to make sure. I mean, y'all are some veteran board members, but we're veterans, military veterans. But I think we can accomplish that. But I think it's just, it's almost, I don't want to use the sin. It's almost a sin to allow this to happen. And apparently, I don't know what the policy is now, but I've not heard an opening prayer, at least at the meeting I was at, the first meeting we had. Maybe we need to find out from the community what they want. They want us to have prayer for them. I mean, it's amazing to me that all other government agencies, from county commission, city council, all the way up to the Supreme Court, always open to prayer. You know, there is a separation of church and state, but before we get to that point, we need some guidance. And I would never vote to change the policy. I don't even know what the policy is now. I don't know if you changed the policy before. I know we didn't have prayer at the first meeting, but I would never vote to eliminate the prayer before the before our board meeting. And I would be willing to do all I can to get the fine folks from Liberty University down here to handle any defense that we might need. So I'm definitely in favor of keeping prayer in our board meeting. And one other thing, if you remember, there was a real, I'm going to say nice, a lady a number of years ago by the name of Madeline O'Hara. And she stood up by herself and got a number of folks with her, I guess. But she eliminated prayer in our schools. And there's an old saying, something about the only way to allow evil to take over is for good people to not act. It doesn't, I mean, something like that. And if we just want to stand by and let it happen, y'all do it. I'm not. I can assure you, I will not.
Do you have a comment?
Sure. having both been sued and spent a lot of time praying these last few months, I can tell you I like my attorney. He's a nice guy, but I don't claim him for the win. And if we're going to be sued, I'd like to be able to pray on the way there.
You betcha.
That's just...
Ms. Simchak.
Well, my main concern when I got this letter and brought it up a few months ago was to have the discussion with the attorney, which she has just had that same discussion with all of us. And there was a clear definitive that what, based on her opinion, again, was that what we were doing would be fine if we created a volunteer list that showed openness to anyone. You know, just make sure you have a list. If there's four names on it, that there's a rotation. If there's 10 names on it, just that it's done fairly and that is in place. And that was the discussion I had hoped to have in October, and that was the reason I had it. It was not to change what we were doing, but it was to make sure that we clearly got a process in place so that our attorney is armed with a very good suitcase full of evidence that we have made every provision for the diversity of our community. And that was the purpose back then, and that's what I would like now. And so hopefully if there's consensus to have our attorney, I guess, would be the one that would clearly develop a process for us that covers her end, if ever needed, to open up that suitcase, which I hope isn't. I hope it's just a threat letter, so that, you know, if you bow to threat letters, for whatever reason, it doesn't have to be this. That's what my hopes were in October, and that's what I'm hoping that maybe as we, you know, retread this, that we have the fairness of having a call-out list, that a procedure's in place that perhaps Ms. Stang can follow to make those, you know, administrative calls for us, and that we just continue as we have.
Further discussion? Ms. Menace?
Yeah, I would just like to make a comment that about something that really is troubling me as we have this conversation. You know, I find it troubling that what I seem to be hearing, and correct me if I'm wrong, you know, we each speak from our convictions, but this is about students. And as school board members, we are not elected to teach children about prayer. And it really scares me to hear that we feel that because I have a strong conviction, I have a right to impose it on others. And that, to me, is troubling, because this nation was founded on the premise of freedom of religion, which also means freedom from religion, if that is what you choose. And I understand. I understand where you all are coming from, and I respect your perspectives, but this is not about you and your convictions. It's about the children in our community. And you know what? It may shock you, but not all children in this community are of Judeo-Christian background. And the message we send them is not a positive message when we feel like we can impose prayer upon them. And I know that this is, you know, this is not what we're talking about, but indirectly it is what we are talking about. So I commend you for your strong convictions, but I remind you that our role, we're not elected as school board members to impose prayer on our public school students. And that's what I seem to be hearing. And that really troubles me. So, you know, I just wanted to voice that for anyone in the community that is listening. You know, this board should be, and I think is, committing to honoring that diversity. And just because a child doesn't pray doesn't mean that they are not welcome in our schools.
Was any of that was said here, was it talking about teaching kids to pray? I mean, I enjoy arguing, by the way, but I don't mean to argue, but I've not heard that we're trying to impose prayer on any students. If that's what I'm hearing, maybe I'm just getting old or whatever, but that's not what's been said. That's not the point of the whole deal, and I don't agree with the comments about us trying to impose prayer on somebody.
I actually believe I heard you say that, Mr. Sears, in your comments, that we need our children to pray. And so I agree with, you know, that's your personal opinion. That's your personal opinion.
This is the
but the clarification was needed, so thank you.
The board meeting. I don't know how other folks pray, but I guess it's up to them.
Ms. Frost, would you like to go first?
No.
Okay. I think... I like to deal in interests, and I hear Ms. Jimenez, and she makes a very compelling case that we are a diverse nation. We have been for a long time, and my understanding is that we've offered prayer at the beginning of our school board meetings, not for the students, but for the board members. The historical board corporate has asked for that invocation, that strength. And that's what's been delivered. Now, to my mind, it would make sense that if we opened up for all faiths to sign up on a list and it moves through rotation, that we're meeting the interests of diversity at the same time the interests that I, as a board member, and you know, this is a selfish thing, I like the idea of someone praying with us at the beginning of a meeting for strength and guidance. So I feel that that represents the best thing, and if it's also one of the most defensible positions from a legal standpoint, that meets the interest. Now, a moment of silence, I don't know that it does the same thing for me, but that's, you know, neither here nor there. So...
Yes, so, and there in where it lies, who is the invocation for? And it is not for the students, it is for us.
But that's my opinion. And so that is where I would agree with you, Mr. Frost, that I would like that strength. And I would like that strength. And I do have the tolerance to have a rabbi come in, although I'm a Christian. I do have the tolerance because it's usually uplifting, as if it was a inspirational moment. I had one prepared that it was God's cup of coffee, and I mentioned God's name in it. So my inspirational moment was going to include the word God. So it's really, as I said, it's just our interpretation of who this invocation is for. And I would be of the consensus that I would be for myself and the board and the staff and the people who are about to conduct the business of the day. And so therefore, I feel that that's really just what we can focus on it whatever way we want to focus it, but that's what it is for me, and that I would like that strength, and I could care less of who performs that moment of uplift for us.
Dr. Adams, you had something?
Well, I just wanted to clearly delineate between what's for students and what's for school board members, because I actually have to certify, and I ask all schools to certify that they, that you don't have a policy that prevents, So there is constitutional law behind students being protected from this issue of prayer. But I just want to make sure that you are doing it for school board, and that students aren't part of aren't brought into, this discussion, because as a school district, we must certify, as your superintendent, I must certify to the state.
Ms. Sherson?
One, for all these nice students that may not condone the prayer, I would imagine probably about whenever those final exams and all come up, you could probably get a pretty good reading on how many of them might be praying, hoping they could
have that right.
But that's not a part of this. I just wanted to mention that. Yeah. I remember doing that.
And the whole point of this was, if we didn't get that letter, I don't think we'd have this discussion. We would continue what we were doing. That, to me, the letter was only to firm up, as you had said, what is the legal action we can take to continue this is not a discussion to change. I mean, it could be a discussion of anything. But for me, when I brought it up, it was not a discussion to change our policy. It was a discussion to continue extra measures that the attorney would put in place. So for me, with that tape recorder running, we have a public record of what we feel the invocation is for. If we reach consensus, if the superintendent is signing off that the individual schools are not teaching prayer, then we have that as well. So that, for me, that has met all the things that, I don't really need to discuss anymore. It has met all the things that I had hoped we could accomplish to continue our invocations.
I think we definitely have.
So the attorney is going to prepare.
That's kind of where I'm trying to wrap up here. I think we definitely have consensus. Now that everybody's had a chance to speak as a chairman, I'll go ahead and say that I have no interest in changing what we were doing, meaning an invocation before the thing. In fact, I want to get back. And housekeeping, I'm sure there was no vote to away from the invocation to the moment of inspiration. What happened was that letter happened. It was a...
I think it was the chairman.
It was the chairman.
The chairman made...
Procedure. I didn't know what it was.
Yeah, exactly. Well, whatever. We do one chairman made a procedure,
change.
And then...
We don't have a policy.
And then, the letter, we get that letter. The thought at that point was not to, with a new board coming in, let's just not make waves, if you will, and just... with that, we went to the moment. Okay, fine. Until the new board comes in. Now the new board comes in, you have this discussion, so we're ready to go. I think, talking logistics now, I know I would be probably happier if we could get something in writing before we go back to the invocation. And I'll defer that to the attorney. Maybe we can direct her to do something like that. Then the other logistics is tonight, which Judy had already hit me on. We needed to do something tonight. What I'm saying is we don't have a moment of inspiration tonight.
Does anybody feel inspired?
I have no.
Rock on.
She's ready for a cup of coffee.
You got that, Judy?
Coming right up.
Mr. Chairman, are we going to give the attorney a time certain in getting back to us? Tomorrow's Wednesday.
The meeting's not till 6.
Right. We've got another one coming up, though, you know, right away. We need to have it, and I guess we've got to approve it before it goes.
Actually, I don't know that we have to approve it, do we?
Well, we haven't changed the policy.
That's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying.
And what do you mean? Point of order. Right away.
Go ahead.
Was it a policy?
It was like January
3rd. Hang on just a second. Mr.
Estes. Let me clear up the policy thing. The school board of Indian River County does not have a policy with regard to prayer, invocation, or otherwise during your business meeting. Okay, so you, at this point, you have never adopted anything that says you either will or will not. It has simply been a practice. My recommendation, what I mentioned earlier, was after hearing your discussion, is to prepare something basically in the form of a resolution that lays out some of the discussion I heard today, as well as the specific process. And I'm assuming you'll have Ms. Stang be the one to send out letters or communications to generate interest to be on this volunteer list for the invocation, and then implement that rotate on a rotation basis. And as more people get want to be added, they just simply add it onto the bottom and they keep rotating through. I'm happy to prepare that as quickly as possible. I'll do it in draft because I'm sure there'll be desire to tweak or change. And I may come up with different options for how to set up the process. You can pick A or B kind of thing. And then you can decide how you wish to finalize it. And then I do suggest that you adopt the resolution so that there's a clear understanding of what Ms. Stang will be requested to do as far as generating the volunteer list.
It should be noted that Ms. Stang's already got a pretty decent list. Right. Mm-hmm. She's been using over time. Mm-hmm. Just kind
and she does rotate.
And she does rotate one right after the other.
Yes. I was thinking more of some sort of a process to get the word out that we're generating interest in being added to the list, kind of to get that inclusiveness of your community. So okay. I'm happy to prepare that and get that to the board members and the superintendent for review.
Okay. All right. Back to me. General information protocol. What was I talking about, Judy? Something specific to me?
Yeah, it was the bottom of that list that has the names on it. The one where you wanted me to change.
Oh, the one where you're going to change that?
It's just the protocol.
Does everybody have this?
No.
Okay. It's just. She's going to change that. It's saying that in terms of public statements, the chairman is the first point of contact. If you're unable to reach the chairman, then the vice chairman, second point of contact. Meetings, dates, agenda, and minutes, if you could ask for them, can be accessed through the website. If there's an email you wish to send to all board members, if you did something you want to get and you want it to get to everybody, send it to Judy first. Mm-hmm. And say distribute this out. Mm-hmm. Okay, you've probably already seen stuff I think from Claudia on that.
But don't respond, right?
Correct.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Invitations. Please send all invitations care of Miss Judy Stang. Will forward and place the date time of the board's calendar. What invitations, Judy?
Invitation to anything so that it gets placed on the board agenda.
If you get invited to come speak at Fells Mears. Problem send it to Judy, make sure she knows to put it on the thing. Okay. That's one piece of housekeeping. Now, I do have one other, if you'll allow me, since it's going to be short also. There are three separate, the Treasure Coast Regional Planning Council. There's also a Treasure Coast Council of Local Governments. There's also a Treasure Coast Work Group. All these, Karen Disney used to do them all. And actually, Mr. Frost, it was the Treasure Coast Council of Local Governments that was on the organization meeting that you've been assigned to. The other two were on information only. They were generally supposed to be for the legislative liaison, which is Mr. Searcy. So that's both the Treasure Coast Regional Planning Council, which is December 19th, mm-hmm. And then there's also a once a month work group called the Treasure Coast Work Group. Okay.
Are they voting members?
Are they voting members?
I've never attended. I don't know. I assume so.
Could Judy find out about those and get you all that information?
Yeah. She can.
And for some reason, you're
something I saw from Karen said that she went when she felt like it or something. So apparently, we're not a voting member of, of the Regional Planning Council.
Okay. But Judy, can you get that to Mr. Searson? Information on those two?
Yes, Matt.
Yeah.
And I've gone to those two, and a lot of legislative. She would look at the agenda to determine if there were any issues that were either legislative. Or, for example, when they started that conversation on the lagoon, that's one of the places where a lot was being said. And so it's an opportunity also to be informed about issues that impact the Treasure Coast and so on. So you'd have to look at the agenda and make that determination.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I think we're good there. Mr. Searcy, you're next up.
One of the other things that we picked up over there, and Fran's not here, but do we have a crisis management person in the district? So if we have a bus crash, which we did when I was on the board before, who is the spokesman? Who is the key person that the press is going to go to? And,
Mr. Fritz, do you mind? Come up to the mic if you would.
Question was asked at the ethics meeting over there, and they said that everybody in the district needs to know who that is, just like the person, Judy Davis,
Brenda Davis,
is that for the 119 request, who the crisis management person is in the district.
I'm the spokesperson for the district.
Oh, you are?
Yes.
Thanks.
Good to know.
That was an easy answer.
That's why I raised my hand.
Actually, I know that answer.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you follow up?
I just wanted to know who it was, and if the people in the district know who it is, in case they happen to see the crisis occur, do they get directly?
They get directly in contact with us in the risk management department. Our risk management department works with our insurer to make sure that they're informed and aware of what's going on, and I prepare a written statement and also talk with the media.
As long as everybody knows, because that's something that could
and
come out.
And we draft the press releases, and they are reviewed by the superintendent's office.
All right. Mr. Menez?
Thank you. My item, actually, the scheduling workshops is really tied in with the superintendent search. Before the new board members came on board, I had brought up to the board members that it would be very helpful as we embark on the search for superintendent to make sure that we're all on the same page, understanding what the initiatives are that the district is undertaking, inclusive of the moonshot goal, to make sure that if this is something that we want to continue, and all of these initiatives, there's ICANN, ITIPS, ERFL, I mean, there's a whole bunch of them. So I think we all need to be on the same page. And it's not just informational, but it's also to have a workshop where we have a sense of how successful they are, what barriers they're facing, so that we know how we want to move forward with these initiatives. And then the second opportunity for a workshop or a discussion is, again, beyond just reading the desegregation order and the equity report, is really having a better understanding of board members of the implications of these documents in terms of hiring someone who is going to have to be sensitive to the issues of our community relative to the DSEG order, because very closely tied to the DSEG order and the equity report is the achievement gap, and also the conversation around race-based goals and how those have been interpreted. So that is something that we all need to be on the same page, and we all need to hear the same thing, because one of the things we've moved away from with this board has been the practice of individually talking to board members and kind of figuring out, okay, this is what you're sensitive to, this is what you're sensitive to, this is what you're sensitive to. We need to be a team that is able to agree to disagree agreeably, but we have to be able to have conversation with the same information. So those were two workshops that I wanted to put out there because, as you know, the majority of our workshops are determined by the superintendent, but board members at any time, if there's any topic that you feel is of interest to the entire board and that impacts our decision-making. An example was when there was a request for a workshop on disproportionate minority contact because there was a lot of conversation going on at the Juvenile Justice Council, and we don't have a representative that goes there that is a board liaison, and our previous superintendent used to attend those meetings, and that doesn't happen because, you know, the superintendent has so many other priorities. So it got to the point where we needed a workshop. So that was something that was board requested, and we can do that. So I don't know how you feel about trying to set up those types of opportunities sooner rather than later.
Well, the workshop, and obviously a lot of it, I'd be in favor of the first one, let's say, off the bat, but one workshop, not two. Well, we cover all those, we're not pulling staff and things like that. And obviously, a lot of it is to make sure that we're all on the same, or what is our opinion, and are we on the same opinion? But a lot of it is information being brought forth by the superintendent and maybe some of her staff. So I know that March is the interview March. Am I right? Right? March,
yes,
is the interview,
yes,
month. So I'm just throwing this out. Perhaps a workshop in February, giving the superintendent time to pull that information together, project what she's working on, those statistics, how it's working, what's the Moonshot Moment doing, what are the statistics, Learning Alliance, all those different things, as well as the DSAG order, where we're at, you know, things like that. And so I would agree that a workshop would be helpful so that we're all on the same page. It would have been nice to have one of those the first year for me, so it'll be great. But also I would respectfully like one workshop. I mean, I'd rather spend 4 hours here than two here and then two weeks later, you know. But that's just me. As long as we have breaks in between. But, you know, I would agree. I would like that. I would think that would be helpful, especially if the following, and I'm just throwing February out there. That's really, it's a lot of work for Dr. Adams as well. But I'm thinking that would tool us with, as a consensus board, where we're at and what we're looking for the new leader. And it's before the interviews.
Right.
I don't know. I'd like to hear what everybody else thinks.
We're all thinking the same thing. So we've worked on a schedule, so I'd like to share with the board to see what you think. Okay.
So really, we're all thinking.
Yeah. So typically, our workshops happen on the second and fourth Tuesday of board meetings. Now, that doesn't mean there's a workshop scheduled all of them, but I'd like to just go over what we've talked about as staff. First of all, we have about 76 policies that have changed as a result of new legislation last year, and a couple of policies that we want to talk to the board about adding, and that's about 250 pages we're going to give you in a notebook. And these are as a result of policy changes that need to take place and adding a few. So I'm requesting for your thought for Tuesday, January 13th, to spend the morning on, and I have Neola there because that's the company, that's the group that we use to help us update, is to spend time in the morning and the afternoon that day because it's so extensive as to, which would mean that we would not have this board discussion on that day. So it is replacing the board discussion because this is the first meeting in January. And you will also note that from 4 to 5 we've set a special meeting and executive session for litigation, which we just received information on that we need to meet. We could schedule discussion from 5 to 6 or we may need an executive session, but that would fill that day. So I'm asking you for number one, that's one thing to consider, letting us take the new policies for the morning and the afternoon of that day. The second thing is you'll see that we scheduled Tuesday, January 27th for a district initiatives update. And it's for the very reasons that you say. I think it's important that we bring information forward about what we have been doing. And as you go into the superintendent search, you have background information that will say that this is really important to sustain these particular things. We're all on board with this. So we would like to be able to do that on January 27th. February 10th, we had previously scheduled a suit of conduct update. We have a committee of community and district level people that are working, students, as a matter of fact, working on looking at the suit of code of conduct in a different way, and this would be their first blush back to the board because it takes that long to get it through policy and ready for the following year. Performance-based contracting is something that we've had at the board level, but we do have two new board members that we feel like you need to have the background, and then we actually had an audit done by FPNL and Con Ed that we would like to share the results of that, and the board has the opportunity to decide whether we want to move forward on that. On March, we didn't have any workshop scheduled, so there are openings there. We know that you're going to be doing the superintendent interviews in March, so we know that will be a busy month for you. As well, there would be an opportunity on March 24th. And then we looked at April to give you some information on accountability, school grades, annual measurable objectives, because this gives you some background going into the season when we're going to be getting data back at the end of the year. So it gives you some background information to use as we prepare for that. And Tuesday, or May 12th is open. May 26th, we get into either, we may interchange May 26th and June 9th, depending on when the legislative conference report comes out, and we do have a state of the district. So there are some things that we've been thinking alike on in terms of trying to get information out. We looked at January 27th for the district initiative because that's moving into the time when you're going to begin to look at resumes. And narrowing down your candidates for superintendent before you go into your interviews in March. So this is to present to you for some discussion, and if you're okay with this schedule, we'll move forward.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much, because you know there are so many moving parts to this. One thing that's not here, and that's something that would be at our discretion, before we did the superintendent search for Dr. Adams, we had a board visioning session to determine the qualities of the leader that we would like to recruit and what our goals are and what our expectations are. And it seems to me that if on the 27th in the morning we're all on the same page and hearing about the district initiatives, that might be an opportune time to talk a little bit about what the qualities are and what the expectations are, because we're also going to need to have a meeting to determine the questions and all the logistics. So, you know, as we schedule, where do you want this to happen? We have to have the visioning. We have to have the planning. We haven't even had a conversation about what community input is going to look like. And when we did Dr. Adams' search, we had community input in terms of what are the qualities that we're looking for, and then fast forward to the candidates, and we had a method for them to give input after each of the interviews. So there is some of that upfront work that we need to schedule in around these.
Can I make a suggestion?
Sure.
So on the 27th, we're going to be fresh with the district initiatives update in the morning. I would like to say and it is our time to do it at a discussion meeting, that we have it on the agenda, our vision, at 1:00. And, I mean, we usually leave, don't do 1 to 4, which is an awfully long time. So if we had that as an immediate agenda item for our discussion group on visioning for the new leader, we have that already planned. It's on the clock. It's there. I'm not saying people don't put discussion items on, but if right. there's pressing things come up, we have it on our discussion, and if it could be bumped to February 10th discussion meeting, you know, we've had, we bring 10 things or 2 things. We what I'm saying is immediate discussion items along with our vision for the new leader can be discussed that day because it's fresh from the initiatives. Mm-hmm. Does that sound, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Instead of having just a vision meeting right at 1 o'clock, jump into, okay, now that we've had that discussion with all of staff and who's ever, now we have our own discussion meeting as a board members, whoever it does, it could be under you or me, but it doesn't matter whose it's under, but a general conversation begins on visioning.
Related to the
at
1
o'clock, to the, that will be an agenda item for our discussion at 1 o'clock on the 27th.
It
while
does.
It's fresh.
Do you want it a workshop or a discussion? A discussion is this. A workshop is you're televising your...
I think that would be more productive in a more informal discussion type
setting. Discussion. Okay.
But I don't know that I would have it as a discussion with 14 things on the agenda, just one of those 14, mm-hmm. because you're also going to need to discuss logistics of superintendent search that we need to do sooner rather than later.
So do we do our discussion from 1 to 3 and have a vision meeting from 3 to 4, or do we do our vision meeting from 1 to 2? You know what I'm saying?
Well, just as a little bit of history, when we had the visioning meeting as the board, it was time allotted to visioning, and we had an impartial facilitator come in. We had Dr. Jerry McPherson mm-hmm. one year, that one time, because, you know, you're talking about leadership in general, and you need someone that is going to ask the board questions and look beyond our own personal ideas of what leadership is. So someone that's going to be mm-hmm. a big picture. So that, you know, that was a workshop, if I recall correctly. Dr. McPherson came in and facilitated, and
right.
you know, as a result of that, we got our qualities and we got our goals. I'm not saying it has to be that way, but I would be cautious in putting it in as one of 12 items, and then we don't get to it, and then look at how busy we are. We lose the opportunity, and we have to start thinking about that because the resumes are here.
She may be available to do it.
But what was the difference being? Was when you had this facilitator, an outside leader, was that when you had a nationwide search from an outside company, or was that when we had Florida School Board Association? And the other thing is, we can have that workshop, but then shouldn't Dr. Blanton be included if he is narrowing down to our 5?
Dr. Blanton, the first time he came, the next time he came down at this point, last time we did this search, that's why we need to get together at some point about logistics on where this is going to go. Because the next time he came down, we had all looked at all the resumes, everybody had kind of, you know, had contacts, people had, you know, the candidate was from Lee County, you knew somebody in Lee County, you knew one school board member, you called them, you kind of done as much homework as you could on your own. We all came in with kind of a just looking at a sheet of paper, because I'm telling you, this is not the most efficient way to hire somebody, but because of sunshine, you're limited in how you can do it. Looking at nothing but paper and maybe a brief conversation or two, we came in, Dr. Blanton came down, we at that point narrowed it down to 5 people. It doesn't have to be 5. But that seems to be a good working number. It could be 7, could be 3, whatever. Came down, and that was a general discussion with everybody and Dr. Blanton. He's already looked through them. He's got some ideas. I know this guy. I know that guy. You don't want him. You know, that kind of conversation. At that point, we narrowed it down to 5. And I want to say that meeting was probably the last time we saw Dr. Blanton. It was the last time he came to Nuremberg, actually came to Nuremberg County. Because at that point, it was us. At that point, it was schedule interviews, get them in here, you know, interviews, follow-ups, and that was pretty much how that went.
And this basically doesn't show him coming back until March 3rd, just like you're saying. It was
okay.
A special meeting with him. You've already received the resumes, and then probably the narrowing. So he doesn't get into the visioning part.
Yeah, Dr. Blanton wasn't part of that. You know, how
whatever. I mean, I'm not real big on the high level kind of stuff. I'm more on down in the weeds. But that was done way before Dr. Blanton came down.
Then I would suggest, and I'm just going to tell you, it's either you remove one of these workshops or have that visioning workshop at night. If it's not going to be on the discussion, we have till March 3rd. Then you have to remove one of these workshops, or you have to have the workshop at night.
Well, you like couldn't do it on the
27th? We don't have anything at night.
That was the discussion. You're saying then not have a discussion.
11:59.
No, he's saying no.
I said, we do anything you want.
I'm confused because I said, let's have it on the 27th.
I just said, yeah, all my own thoughts were, if that's
call it a workshop, not a discussion.
How about we set it up
as we can decide how many hours we think we need for visioning. So if it's from 1 to 4, it could be 1 hour or 1.5 hours of discussion. If we finish early, we go right into visioning. But we need to at least have the idea that we're, no matter what happens, we're going to spend 2 hours on visioning, for example, or 1 hour, whatever the board decides. But we want to avoid it falling by the wayside because we're not going to have opportunities together to do the preparation we need in order to prepare for our interviews.
Any other thoughts?
A good chairman will be able to keep us on task.
I'll see if I'm fine.
if we just rock along and let it be open, it's just, you know, it'll take all the time we've got. And I was complimenting.
But if
it says we're going to be from 9 to 9:15 talking about this issue, it's time for the hammer to go down. And I think that this board will make more progress if we have that time-certain deadline. The other piece that I would say, though, is it looks to me like, and I'm a working man, but I would think that we should be able to condense these morning board workshops and these discussion sessions into a half day. You know, you go in for a couple of hours and then you take off for 2 or 3 hours and come back. Why can't we just put it all together and then have that great leader saying, this is the end of the board workshop, turn off the televisions or whatever, and then we're going to move right into a discussion session, whatever. It appeared to me that that would be a good thought.
Ms. Jeff?
I just want to tell you, too, I noticed the time change from 9:30 to 9.
We only did that because we thought we were doing it for one board member. Is that for you too?
That had worked out for me, and I changed everything around.
That was our goal.
So you're saying you want to go back to 9?
9:30. She wants to keep it at 9:30.
When I came in, when we changed it to 9:30, I worked everything out.
I'm sorry. I did that. I thought it was only
I'll
because
have to work everything out back if that's a problem with everybody, but no, you know. No,
so everybody would have come in today thinking they were 9:30.
Strategy formulation, things like that, that's what I do with corporate clients, but it would be wildly inappropriate for me to do it here for the same reason, you know, Claudia mentioned, it's bias. Would it be possible, is it even appropriate to ask like a Mr. Fritz, who I'm sure has facilitated a meeting or two, or Mr. Reinberg, who I know is also a leadership guru, to ask them to facilitate our visioning or workshop?
I think that's up to you. I don't want to go in with necessarily a recommendation from staff.
Right, it wouldn't be a recommendation, but
they could certainly do it.
The third person objective in the room.
Just a comment. Just before I make my comment, Mr. Searcy, your flippant remarks about prayer are distasteful. As we begin our time together as board members, we need to remember to be respectful of each other. And whether or not you agree with my comments, I would appreciate it if you remained civil and lived according to your Judeo-Christian principles, because that flippancy is disrespectful. So in the same way I respect you, I expect you to respect me. Thank you. Having said that, I think that we need to be careful because we want someone that's not subjective and all of the right. staff are going to be working with the superintendent. We want to get input from staff, but we can't get anyone else. I mean, sure, but it would be. I think it would just be better to get someone that can just take the big picture, and they don't have a conflict of interest.
My concern would be more for them.
Yeah, right. Well, and it wouldn't be.
That's all. Not that they couldn't, for sure.
I think at this point we're not discussing names. We're just yeah. discussing attributes, yeah. right?
Oh,
any
yeah,
any facilitator who can keep us
attributes.
Civil would be an asset to the room, I think. But, and it was just, you know, yeah. resources on hand, I think.
Ms. Simchester.
Dr. Massey, would he be a good facilitator? I don't know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, well, absolutely. I'm saying there's just somebody, I think, that, because I've we are working with the college, and I just think that's a name that goes out. In my mind,
it would be wonderful.
Well, I can let me just chime in real quick. I'm trying to put this the right way, in a nice way, and and I think probably Dale knows this. I'm sure about this. The whole idea of visioning, that kind of level thing, I'm lost. It doesn't mean anything to me. Honestly, we could have it, not have it, and mm-hmm. I say that respectfully. Have it, not have it. I don't care. I'm more interested in the logistics of hiring a superintendent. If we want to, if board members want to devote an hour, find certain divisioning at a high level, I'm more than willing to sit through it. It's not something that I'm really married to. The only other thing I'll say I'll save that till later. I think we can use that afternoon, the 27th. Do some logistics planning. Again, if we want to do some visioning, that's fine. I'd say an hour of that, and then the rest of the afternoon on logistics, on the superintendent search, and devoted to the superintendent search. And we can call it just a superintendent search workshop.
Yeah.
Just the first mm-hmm. hour is kind of higher level stuff, and then we get into the nuts and bolts of what we need to do.
I was going to suggest divide it in half. It's 1 to 4. So do 1 to 2:30 on the vision and 2:31 to 4 o'clock on discussion. And you have the time certain that we've had.
We might want to flip it in case we finish the discussion earlier.
Yeah.
So discussion from
yes, 1 to 2:30. And then if we finish early, roll right on into the vision that takes us to 4. So we know that we have at least an hour and a half on the vision, and maybe more.
I'll defer to other board members. I'd rather keep it the other way.
Okay.
To make sure we have enough time. Discussion. Share any thoughts?
The visioning thing probably is a really good idea. We're going to have a new person leading the district, and wouldn't it make sense to have that person buy into what our vision is for this district? I mean, we may think we know everything, probably don't, but that new person may can put a different perspective on how we can reach the goals that we may want to input. Getting that right person is one thing, but the vision for this district is mostly board, but it just seems to me that we should maybe get a different perspective if we have that new superintendent on board with us. And it may be that we may have a visioning process now, and then immediately after the new board or the superintendent comes on, we have that second hour of that visioning process or whatever.
And maybe it's my this is why it's good that we have this discussion. I think my interpretation or what I thought the visioning was, we can't talk to each other because it's sunshine. Right. So this would be like, hey, do you still like the moonshot moment? No, do you? Okay, do we want this new superintendent when we hire to be a part of that? Do you want to get back into the DSEG, or do you want to file to, get us released from it? Or do you want, it was so that we use that visioning tool and to see where we're at when we hire. But I hear what you're saying. We do, the minute we get somebody in, need work with them, but this way we all know as a board corporate, right. What is the board corporate looking for? That was my interpretation of what the vision was, hey, what are you looking for?
The superintendent.
Yeah, what's your vision of the superintendent?
Right.
Do we need a community builder or someone who can
Clean house.
Yeah, and that's right. what we had, in respect, you weren't on the board yet, I was worried about somebody comes in and it's off with your heads, and then all the work and all the people she's put in place and all the, you know, that goes like that the minute the guy or gal signs the contract. So that the visioning was, what do we envision as we go down the hiring path? So it could take 10 minutes or a half, as he said. So that really was what all that was for. Right? Am I right?
Mr. Searson?
Well, from the looks of things, though, we need to have all of that in place, because from the note I got from the attorney is we're not going to be able to ask any questions if you saw all the things that we cannot ask about. It's just going to have to be hope.
And it is. It's not an efficient way to hire somebody. I mean, believe me.
The list is unbelievable. I thank you for the list.
You're welcome, sir.
The meeting or the interviews are probably going to go something like this.
No, I assure you they don't.
Great questions, Mr. Searson.
Haven't been on the receiving end of that.
We asked a lot of good questions. I mean, we don't need to know if they're pregnant or not.
Oh, what their age is.
We don't need to know.
Do they still
beat
their wives?
No, their children.
Medical information.
Okay, let's... All right, let's back on track. So I think we are all on board for the 27th, if I'm reading everybody right, for the afternoon.
From one to four.
We can move 1 to 4 because our morning is going to be 9:30 to 11:30. Mr. Searcy, generally I agree with you. Once I'm here, I'd rather be here. However, folks, you have to eat lunch. Mm-hmm. We're going 9:30 to 11:30, and we can start the next one at 12:30. I don't care about that.
That's good.
I've got to go put some groceries in my gut at some point.
Do you need to?
So, what's your plan, or what is the board consensus in terms of any kind of facilitation? Did you want to contact Mr. Massey and see if he would be
able to? That's going to be a board consensus thing. Mm-hmm. If you're asking me my personal opinion, I don't necessarily, I didn't get much out of it every time we had somebody come in from the outside. But again, I never do. If you think it would help to have Mr. Fritz or somebody like that to come in and help, kind of somebody who's an educator, unlike most of us, aren't those long-term, lifelong educators, who may not, I don't know. I need some kind of input on that.
Well, would you be willing to ask Mr. Massey if he's
available? Yeah, I'd call
him.
I mean, down the street from him.
I recommend that. I mean, we can say no. We'll just come in and visit ourselves.
Right. Yeah. He may not be able to. He may not be able to. Let's try.
Just for an hour at 1 o'clock?
Hour and a half.
I just thought it might be helpful to recap what Dr. Blanton said at the last meeting regarding the superintendent search. First of all, if you have any kind of discussion or information session or what have you, minutes are taken. The persons applying will be privileged to everything you say, so they will know how. If they know what you're looking for, they will be able to gear their interview based on what you need.
Mm. But we still have to. I know what you're talking about, Judy. We talked about that last year.
So does it need to go shade off site?
We can't. Those are just logistics. Thank you, Judy. But we had that conversation last time when it's a bigger picture. I can tell you this. When... And this is just for, not directed at anybody, in fact it's directed at me, who will throw off stupid jokes if I think I get a laugh at a moment's notice. Anything from here going past, you know, months ago, when we get down to it and we have, we break it down to maybe two candidates, one candidate, three candidates, whatever, we come down to the final candidate or two. I know I had extensive, it came down to Dr. Adams and Mr. Wayne Jent. And I got to know Wayne pretty well, and I would, you know, call him. I can tell you, he had gone back, and Fran, obviously, it's a moot point. He had gone back. He had listened to every board discussion, every workshop. He had watched tapes of every single board meeting going back about 2 years.
That's smart.
And everybody who's in that position is going to do that.
Right.
And, in fact, it even talking with Ms. Johnson and Ms. Disney when they were on the board years before that,
when we ended up with Dr. LaCava, if you were, and I don't know how, I'm sure Mr. Searcy is familiar with it, but back then, they actually had one or two candidates that they came down to, ended up walking away. Because they had gone back and watched. Literally. I mean, a board meeting was going on until 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And so they were walking away. So I say that just to reiterate that everything you do and everything you say is going to be watched by those candidates. And, you know, if they see things they don't like, number one, you may not scare somebody away, but, you know, you may miss out somebody. Plus, it's going to drive the price up. Mm-hmm. You know, if you know,
a good person is going to be interviewing you the same
exactly.
way.
Exactly. That's a better, much better way of putting it. Anyway, I think that does it for superintendent search update. Who are we on?
Matt.
Yeah.
Are we going to have a conversation about community input? I think that is important.
That's part of the logistics. Again,
we're going to wait until February, until January.
When would you like to do it?
Well, I don't know, but I just get a sense that people are hearing about the superintendent search. I'm sure everybody's been copied on the emails of people offering to help out. And I really think that our community needs to know sooner rather than later what the venue is for input before, you know, we set our own agenda around our visioning, and then when, you know, what the schedule is going to be once we develop it for the interview input process.
Couple of points. Number one, we'll be doing initial interviews in March. Correct, March?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It won't be till just before then. So it won't be, I mean, Mr. Blanton won't be down until March 3rd. We won't know till at least March 3rd who your five people you're going to bring in to interview even are. Okay? One, two, three may be from out of state. They may be from a long way away. They may be from Tampa. At that point, Judy then earns her $1.98 a week by she's got to set up all those, find out from them logistics, when they can get in here. Remember, we just have a window. We don't have these things set up. So we don't know when exactly the things are going to be. So it's great to say, well, yeah, we'll have citizen input. We're going to do it this way on this such. We're not going to know. Mm-hmm. Now, we can have a discussion. So that's why I don't believe on January 27th, again, those logistics kind of things. I think that way we can say, yeah, we're planning on having citizens input by making candidates available an hour before we meet. However we choose to do it. And I don't care how we choose to do it. Ms. Hunchak?
And maybe I made a mistake on the interpretation when Dr. Blanton was here and we talked about it, and they talked about that they could write sheets, but I've been getting the same emails, and I just had answered that we had discussed it as a group, and then when we get closer to the, you know, I'm not sure what the format is, but I'll keep you informed on the date and what we'll do. So I've been answering people that they're, because I made the assumption at that meeting from what I heard that we were going to allow it, but we didn't know how, whether it was on a piece of paper and turn it in, that we hadn't determined. So I've told people that thank you for their interest, but I'll get back to them on the dates and how, you know, process would be.
I'm talking about two different things.
Okay.
I think Dr. Adams had a copy of the form that we used when we had narrowed down to five candidates, and we printed the schedule, come in, fill it out. We all got copies of it, and we used it as feedback. But before we got to that point, in the same way that we as a board are visioning to determine what are the qualities that we want collectively, what are the goals that we want to maintain collectively, there was an opportunity for the community to share with the board, this is the kind of leadership we would like for our school district. And that's different than when we've already made the decision, these are the five or six or seven candidates, come and give us your input. So my question to the board is, how are we going to let the community know that we are interested in hearing from them in terms of what they would like to see in their community's public school leadership? So that's a different question. So it's a two-part question. I know we'll figure out the input later, and there's no rush, because you're right. You know, we already know when they're going to interview. But I'm thinking before, when are we going to have that conversation to try to set something up if the board decides that's what they want to do?
Well, to be honest with you, people are not waiting for that.
I am getting, and I think the whole board was saying, I want somebody from the outside, or I want this, or I want that. And I just have to say, we are elected officials, and we all have our own being that people either wanted or didn't want to sit in the seat. And if we took that much consensus on everything, we would never get anything done. That when it comes time to, if somebody wants to put the time in and come in and make a sheet, that's fine. And nobody is, quickly as there's a problem, they can find our email address, and we have already gotten input on what they feel. So, I mean, we could add another layer, but I don't think that if we start layering everything we do, we're going to get stuck in the muck. So I am getting emails already. This is what I want. I'm not saying that I agree with that opinion, and I'm not saying, but I'm nobody's filtering because they haven't gotten the green flag that it's okay for them to tell us. So I hear what you're saying, but I think we're layering the process too much. But if somebody is that strong about it and wants to come in and the final charges. The other thing is, if this lady did not resign, you know, there's people that, and I'm not being harsh on you, but there's people that were not happy with your leadership in the community, but you weren't moving. The fact that you moved and vacated a seat, like I said, we could go out there and start polling people, but that doesn't stop them from emailing me. I mean, I'm already getting that input. So, you know, and then...
You sure we can't talk in one more year?
I was just thinking that for all of us.
Yeah. You know, I just want to give my opinion that I think that you do represent the community, and I think getting an email is not the same as coming face-to-face, because I think about more than just community members. I think about our school community. I mean, I think that there are people within the school community that might want to have the opportunity to share, and it's up to them to decide whether they want to come in or not, but at least you've provided an open opportunity where, as a board, you're there to listen to that. And maybe you only do it for an hour and a half or whatever, I don't know, but I'm suggesting that the community is bigger than people who choose to email, and letting the community know that you're willing to listen to what they have to say, I think, sends a strong message.
Yeah, as a candidate, I put up a survey on my website about the superintendent search. It's real easy, you know, being a bit of a techno nerd. It was two questions. It was, should we internal candidate or external candidate? And the second question was, what attribute, a turnaround? I listed a few different types of scenarios for a superintendent. Minimal participation, I think maybe five people did the survey, but I didn't have a lot of traffic to my website. If we were to do something like that, you know, as a board, or even just as a board member, just as an individual, say, hey, look, go to my website, you know, or go to this website and provide your voice, because people are, you know, more people vote for American Idol than our president. So that ought to tell you something there. If we make it easy and convenient, I do think that it's important that the entire public feel heard. You know, that they feel heard, that they have at least an opportunity. I think the face-to-face is obviously a good idea, but there are some people who are willing to fill out a survey, even if it's just two questions or three questions, that help us, you know, we are an elected republic. We are the people who have the final vote, cast the final vote. But I feel that our information gathering could be better, could be more open. And I don't know if that's something we want to do on the district website or not. But as far as what the public feels, and it's not about them having an opportunity in the a vote on the final. You know, we're not going to open it up and say, these are your five candidates, and whoever wins, you know, that would be
home.
Right. Yeah. I can see someone out there writing the robot for that right now that does the voting for them. But as far as them having an understanding of our process and us having a process that includes as many stakeholders as we reasonably can in making this decision, I think is, you know, it's. The superintendent's going to need the support of the community, so we need to make it as easy as possible for them to be involved.
Well, I think that maybe something that we would have to create something collectively during a discussion meeting on what you think are good qualities, and also a section for comments. But also, nothing is stopping that person from our meeting as well.
No.
Public input every meeting, including tonight. Somebody can fill out a piece of paper and tell us what they want. So, I mean, we can workshop 100 things 100 ways, And, you know, I mean, our community has so many opportunities to come and get in touch with us. But whatever the board feels, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I can think of comparable what we did is several years ago when the economy really went off the cliff, we were going through those budgets. We knew we were going to be cutting $10 million, okay, try to make the public feel a part of it. And we would have, you know, open houses, you know, saying we will all be here. We want to hear from you. Open this room up. Went to North County. Open it, you know, wherever. You'd have one person there. Maybe two. I can't say that would happen with the superintendent search. I mean, certainly, if something like that is what you had in mind, Ms. Bennett, I will put on a tie and I will come and I'll sit here. And if two people show up or 200 show up, I'll sit here and listen as long as I want to talk. But, you know, understand that staff time also.
Yeah, there's the key right there. That's staff time. It's not staff time. It's the board members listening to the community. When you know, and that's the running joke, you know, when I got on the board, I requested, and the board, you know, humored me, and we had a community forum for the budget, and it was full of staff in suits. That was not the intent. The intent was open, show the community that you want to listen to them as elected officials. It's not bring in all your staff and everybody's like, oh my God, you know, all the staff is there in their suits. That was not the intent. It wasn't, you know, but that's what it evolved into. And then, of course, the complaint was, what a waste of staff's time. And I was like, well, that was your choice to bring staff. The idea was, can school board members meet with the community? And if one person shows up, so be it. I feel as an elected official, my job is to be open to the community. And when people say, well, you didn't ask us, we'll say, well, we had a community forum, nobody showed up. We had a survey, nobody responded. We have emails, nobody emailed. We have phones, nobody called. We have an office, nobody came. What else could I have done? But when we don't do it because it's staff time or because one person's going to show up, you know, I think that we're sending a message that, you know, that's not, you know, and I don't know. What I had a hope that we would do, I've seen school board members or I've heard of school board members doing this in other counties. They do community forums, not just for school board, but for other issues that are like assessments and stuff like that, that are important to the community. And it's the board members and the community just to hear, just to listen. What I had hoped was that we could say, well, maybe we'll do a forum in the North County, a forum in the South County, and a centralized forum. We notice it. It's open to the community. At least one board member commits to being there, but everybody doesn't have to be there if they can't make it. If each board member could at least make one and it's noticed, then, you know, some people may decide to show up, because part of it, too, is building relationship. A survey does not allow for building relationship and getting to know your elected officials. So that was my intent, just to create an open space. We don't need staff there. I don't know why we would need staff there.
And I say for this, you wouldn't necessarily. They could attend if they wanted to, but it's not a staff.
But you'd have to have the building open.
You'd have to have the building open, yeah.
So getting away from theory, logistics here, we are trying to a goal here. We have can I need some discussion on Ms. Jimenez's idea of having some kind of, you talk about at night, when people are off work. I mean, I need some discussion on something like that. Would the rest of the board members be amenable to something like that?
I can't see where it benefits us. We have two board meetings a month, and how many people do you have coming to school board meetings? I mean, my recollection was it's not very many, and we handle a lot of very serious business every single meeting. And if people want to have their input about the superintendent, they're going to get it to us. And we're all out in the community, we're all hearing what they want to say, what they want us to hear. And I went to some of those budget meetings that we had around the area. I didn't see any benefit.
and I would agree with Mr. Searcy as far, and Ms. Jimenez, is, and I'm asking the attorney, how would you term it? It's not an action item, and it's not a consent item. Can't we just put a discussion item for a superintendent search on the agenda, and that covers that public input time, and allow it, people to input? For a meeting, it is scheduled, and then we have both.
We have it at our business meeting?
At our business meeting. Instead of a 3 minutes where somebody is just, okay, they got 3 minutes, and you can either all plug your ears or not, and there's not, doesn't seem to be discussion, that there is a, because it's not quasi-judicial, but we want the ability to have a discussion with the public as an item. Will probably, as you said, Mr. Searcy, not get many takers, but we will, as Ms. Jimenez said, afford the opportunity. Where would that heading be? And how will we cover that? How can we cover that? What are some of our options?
You can certainly add that item to your existing board business agenda, beginning, end, wherever you would like to place it, and then clarify that it is not subject to your otherwise 3 minute per speaker rule. I mean, you may want to put a time frame for an hour, we'll do this, and then we'll, or 2 hours, we'll do this. I mean, put some sort of a parameter somewhere on it, and then whoever wishes to come.
And just follow up on that. So then I would think that the 27th agenda would be perfect because we will have fresh district initiatives, an afternoon visioning, and then the final, culmination of public input. If that sounds good. It'll be advertised. If we felt that the room was packed and we couldn't get enough, isn't there always an option where we can carry that over to or do a second work, carry it over to the next board meeting?
Absolutely. The board can do that. You can set a special meeting. If you see 500 people and you only got through 100, you could certainly set a special meeting to continue with that or add it onto the next regularly scheduled board business meeting agenda. It's certainly the discretion of the board how you would like to continue.
Yeah.
Just do it. Okay. All right. Sounds good. With a 1 hour time limit?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Ms. Judy, you got that?
Yes, sir. You're talking about January 27th agenda.
Sounds
special
good.
Today.
Okay. I totally lost track of where we are in this lineup.
Thank you, Captain. Mrs. Simchuk.
It was mine. I was mine.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Simchuk, you got anything else? Mm-hmm. Mr. Frost?
No, sir.
All right. Next thing we needed to go over was Land Use and Acquisition Committee. Mr. Frost, you familiar with this?
Not terribly.
Okay. All right, I didn't mean to put you on the spot. That's why it's on this one. Thanks. Mr. Pierce, are you familiar with the Land Use Acquisition Committee?
I'm going to say yes and no.
Yeah.
Go ahead and tell me about it.
Go ahead. You talk about it. This was an offshoot of an old committee they had years ago. It was called the Land Acquisition Committee. Obviously, the district's not committing land. In fact, this is back during the boom time. Wasn't going to be in any land acquisition mode anytime in the foreseeable future. So that group morphed into a Land Use and Acquisition Committee. This goes back, I think, and I've got a couple of these. You can see who's on it. Oops, excuse me, right now. That was the last time it was updated. What this group does is anytime there is a question about facilities, I think the first time we used them was when the Citrus Elementary parking loop mm-hmm. came in. That's mm-hmm. that's when this kind of mm-hmm. morphed. Because
purchased a piece of property.
Because he had to purchase a little sliver of property to have enough room for a loop. That's when this first came into being, and we've used them several times since. With the we use them extensively in the Osceola property sale, the old Osceola site. They were great then. And we've used them several times since then. And they meet, how often do they meet?
Almost as needed.
Yeah, they just meet as needed. Mm-hmm. They're all volunteers. You can see they've got some good people on there. It's going to be coming up. When do we have to renew
January.
These? January. I don't believe, Ms. Simchuk, you just left your person on there.
No, I didn't.
You did not? I apologize.
I just wanted to jump in.
Yeah.
And I would ask Dr. Adams if she could get Mr. Sanders to do this. I met with Mr. Sanders and Ms. Ellen for 3 months, so I have an application for her. I went and met with Mr. Sanders for Fellsmere planning and zoning stuff, and I talked about the requirements of this
board, and he has a list of all the vacant property that we own, mm-hmm. and maps, and he made a packet for me and a packet mm-hmm. for my appointee, and I just think that it's only fair that that packet gets that, so that when I give the packet, to, you know, that I have something to give my packet with the understanding, she understands that you may never meet. Mm-hmm. Well, you may meet. We might sell a lot of property or buy a lot of property. That I had something to give my appointee, and that name and that application will be submitted for the January agenda. But there is a packet available, so I was hoping that. But I did not think to say that to Mr. Sanders. Sure. So if you can have him create that small packet for Mr. or everybody who wants it, because it was very. You know, it's nice to see what we have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we actually did that for the Land Acquisition Committee. They were interested in knowing what properties were available.
Right, because we didn't know we owned that. Pleasant Ridge, was that what it's called?
Pleasant Ridge.
We didn't know we owned it.
And there may be a reason to meet. There is a piece of property that was dedicated by the county to us, but we never accepted it. I understand. So there's a question there that you can answer.
Okay.
So on the paper, on the books, and on the deed of, you know, it's ours. But they should meet whether we should accept that property or not. And so there's about 10 properties.
And they really have done a great. They've done a great service to us in those certain items where we've needed them. But back to the question at hand. What you need to do is, if you have somebody in mind, you just want to keep that person on there, touch base with them, and they will. Even if you want to leave them there, you have to make sure they want to do it again. But if you have somebody in mind you want to do it, they'll need to pick up a volunteer. First, you need to contact and make sure they're willing to do it. And then they'll have to fill out a volunteer form and just get with Judy, give her the name, the contact information, and we'll get them on the January agenda and get them approved then.
Is financial disclosure involved?
I do not believe so, nor is there drug testing, fingerprinting, anything like that. It is a strictly just volunteer board.
Who has the forms? Judy or?
Ms. Postel will be a green line.
Well, probably either one. Do you have those forms, Judy, for the committee?
Yes,
she has them.
All right.
And the other thing is, if you would let Mrs. Stang know who it is, so we'll get the packet out to them. We'll contact Mr. Sanders through her.
Who decides whether they're accepted or not? If we appoint them.
The board approves in January.
But I mean, it's not. They're going to go through some screening process before.
No.
I don't have any bad guys.
Oh, really? Okay.
Our girl.
So I think that's all I have. That. Yeah, we found out. We didn't know, the district didn't know all the citrus bowl.
Yes, so Mr. McCain, your touchdown actually doesn't count.
That's right.
Okay, we're back to Mr. Searcy. You have anything else?
I did have one issue, and I don't know if it really works or not, but I just happened to be sitting around reading the state constitution one day, and I noticed in there that it said something about, this is about that new facility we're building up from 66 or 7 to 57, wherever it is up there, main offices needed to be located within the at the county seat. And I'm wondering if we could get some idea from our illustrious attorney to find out if indeed we are on firm ground by building a facility that could possibly be in violation of the state constitution.
May I respond?
Please.
Mr. Searcy, the provision that you're reading in the state constitution does not apply to school boards. You need to go to Article 9. That's the provision that deals with public education and school boards. The provision that you're reading applies to the county government, and it also would apply to municipalities, but it would not apply to the school board.
I saw that. It really made
me Yes,
nervous.
Sir.
I'm have to move it.
I'm sure the school board has the discretion to place their facilities within the school district, which is the county border.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. It took me about a year to figure out that there's the rules that those are in for-profit world live in, and then you got to go over to non-profit governmental, and then there's a special rules over here for schools.
That's true.
It's
crazy.
Mind-numbing. Ms. Menas?
Yes, I just want one last item relative to the superintendent search. When we did the search the last time, we actually had our secretary put together for each board member a binder with all the resumes and all the information relative to the search. And I think we need to have that discussion. I know that so far we have about 11 resumes, and you know, the sooner that we can look at that and start making phone calls and whatnot, I think for all of us who have other jobs, and you know, that would be helpful. But I don't think the secretary will do that unless the board makes that request. So I just wanted to bring it up and make sure that we are able to continue with that process.
No, I don't think Judy's got a problem with that. We're planning on doing the same thing, correct?
Yes, I can prepare them now so you can start.
Yeah, and they're numbered, so it makes it easier to say, instead of we're discussing together, instead of Mr. Williams. Oh, which Williams are you talking about? No, we're talking about number 12. Mm-hmm. And she does a nice job. Right, so that's nice. Ms. Simchick, you have anything?
No.
Ms. Frost?
No, sir.
The only other thing that was on mine was a small, again, related to superintendent search, just an update that Judy prepared for us. And actually, Ms. Menas hit the number on the head, because it says we have 10 resumes. There's one in my inbox this morning. So we are up to 11.
For the record, I didn't go into your inbox.
And there are 8 out online right now. You know, there was a request. I don't know what you saw, but they're on TC Palm.
Great.
Okay. Once more through, since I went again, Mr. Searcy.
Mr. Chairman. On these, the previous board, hired Blanton
Blanton
to handle the superintendent search.
Mm-hmm.
Is he the only one that's going to have input on the candidates that we want to interview, or will this board be able to say,
he just gives suggestions.
Want 6, 7, and 8 on that?
Sure. No, you can tell him he's, you know.
Okay.
No. It's this board's decision. And it's
I knew it was our decision, but I didn't know what the screening process was going to be with him.
He's not going to see anything that we don't see.
Okay.
Okay. Ms. Menas, anything else?
No.
Ms. Simchick?
Yeah.
Ms. Frost, one last time?
No, sir.
Oh, yeah. Well, I always did. It was always no, and then never pops up. Dr. Adams, do you have anything?
No, I just brought the workshop information to you, and I appreciate that you're willing to go with that. So just as a reminder, on January 13th, we will be having the board policy updates for the morning and the afternoon, and it will be a very full schedule.
But the times will change back to the 9:30.
Back to the 9:30.
I just want to make sure so I don't show up late.
Okay, and I purposely skipped one there just to make sure if Dr. Adams had something that we got that in, even though you have plenty of time. Are there any board committee reports?
I have reports from the Greater Florida Consortium of School Boards and from FSBA. I am handing out copies of 2 documents. One of them, the one behind this first resolution, is the platform for the Greater Florida Consortium of School Boards. The page that has the map of Florida is the platform itself that was presented to you at a school board meeting and approved, and this was not changed. The second document in the smaller print is the document that reflects the changes that different school boards requested to the additional items, and this was approved at their board meeting, which was held during the Florida School Boards Association conference. And from their meeting, when we were talking about issues, there were just a couple of things I wanted to just bring before you. One of the concerns that we're seeing moving forward in terms of what's happening now that everybody has been elected and all the committees are being formed is in terms of FRS, there are concerns that the governor's goal has always been for it to be a 5% contribution. He's gotten it up to 3%. And there is a possibility that it may go up to 5%, and that really affects us, because with our teachers, that type of contribution from the employee is a hit to their salary. So that's just something to be mindful. You know, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen, but that is something that people are going to be paying attention to. Another issue that was brought up that was really interesting was the reauthorization of the ESEA. And what I didn't realize was that the waiver that Florida has expired July 1st. And so that means that as of this moment, we are not in compliance with the mandate that every child be at grade level by 2014. So we are under that mandate, and I don't know if the superintendent has any information in terms of what happens next. You know, is there a possibility of that waiver being renewed? But nothing has been done in terms of any financial consequences or anything of that nature because the 2014 goal has not been met. So I just thought that was interesting. I don't know if Dr. Adams, you have any
Vern Crawford will probably give us a federal update to that. You know, the ESC waiver, I think, has been out there for 3 years now trying to get them to move on it, and nothing has happened. So if I get any update from Mr. Crawford, I'll pass that on.
Okay. Thank you. And then another issue that came up for some school districts.
Before you go on, I know we all fall into this because we've dealing with so long. Does everybody understand what ESEA is?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Okay. I'm sorry.
It's
I didn't mean to.
Secondary Education Act.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. The federal government.
We should add that to our acronym.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm sorry. Okay. Another concern that came up in that conversation was that some of our school districts are having have concerns about the school start date because Labor Day is a floating holiday and some school districts actually finish their semesters and do their final exams before the holidays and they will be impacted. And this is a perfect example of what happens when we don't have local control. We're constitutional officers, we're overseeing our school districts, yet the state sets the parameters for when we start school. So for us, it may not be as much of a concern because we don't do the exams before the break, but some school districts, I think like West Palm, do, and that's really been a concern for them. And then a final item that they discussed at the Greater Florida School Board Consortium was that for us as elected officials and with all of the issues that we're having in terms of the assessment implementation, this is a perfect opportunity to leverage the concerns that parents have. Because as Dr. Adams spoke earlier when we were talking in our assessment workshop, there are a lot of concerns about the implementation, and parents are not happy with this quick turnaround and what it's going to mean for their schools. So this is an opportunity for us to communicate with parents and to make sure that we explain and educate in terms of what's happening, because there's a lot of there's a lot of concern. So those are the items relative to the Greater Florida Consortium of School Boards. Just very quickly, I also attended the FSBA Legislative Committee meeting as your liaison. This year or next year, Florida School Board Association Day in the Legislature is going to be in Tallahassee, March 11 through 12, and I will be there as your FSBA Legislative Liaison. The Tampa Conference will be June 10th to 12th, and on the 12th of June they will have the Legislative Review, which is something they do on a regular basis. There was discussion of the FSBA platform, which was brought forth to you for approval. The membership recommended a few minor changes because that's when, you know, we had that final meeting. So as soon as those changes are incorporated, I will bring it before you. The National School Board Advocacy Institute will be in Washington, D.C., February 1st through 3rd. And the issues that they brought up, in addition to the issues that the consortium brought up, because there's so much overlap, have to do with the transition time and with awareness that the charter school Bill 7083 is going to be refiled, and that's going to have implications for school districts. And then the final item that I wanted to share with you, I'm not going to talk about it in depth, but I did bring copies for you. There was a workshop on charter school oversight, and we had a school board member from Palm Beach County, Chuck Shaw, talk about charter school oversight, and we had our own Gene Waddell from Indian River Charter High School present. So I brought a copy, and I will leave this in our office so that if you'd like to look it over or make a copy, you can avail yourself of it. And then this one also, I brought a copy for your information. Every time we meet, there's usually a workshop on hot topics in education law. And we spent the entire workshop. There was supposed to be another piece on the Medicaid waiver, which I was really hoping to learn more about, but that never happened because the discussion here was around the issue of gender identity and the impact that recognizing this issue is having on schools is something that we should be paying attention to. In Maine, there was a lawsuit brought before a school district, and they had to pay $75,000 for not accommodating a student. And, you know, there are also issues in Pasco County. There was a teacher who announced plans to, that was transgender, who announced plans to change gender, and that created a lot of discussion. So even though we don't have that issue before us, it's important that we be aware that these issues are out there, and, you know, there could be repercussions when there is, when there aren't accommodation or there isn't consideration for these students and adults. So these two items I will leave outside our office in case any of you are interested in reading them. And that's my board update.
I just want to comment on, recently we were all privy to ADA accommodations for a particular school. So I just would hope, and I'm just, this is directed to the superintendent, that if there was any, and that's one situation, there could be 100 of different accommodations and things like that. You would, I hope, make sure that you would let us know that there has been a request for certain accommodations.
Absolutely.
So that way we can move forward on that. I forgot where I left off with Ellesmere and Sebastian. They have canceled their P&Zs recently, but the RV park across from the Charter Junior High, mm-hmm. the planning and zoning voted down.
So
that doesn't mean that it mm-hmm. won't come up at City Council. One of the things that I noticed was which was all conceptual, did not have the turning lane years ago when I was a councilwoman, just the townhouses, which was many less lots, had a turning lane in. But again, it was conceptual. The council will be voting on that and may overturn the planning and zoning recommendation in January, but I will keep you posted. And then Ellesmere, obviously, with the annexation of the Cargan Ranch and the Tunna property, had I did deliver to Scott Sanders, which he was not aware. Prior, there was supposed to be three elementary schools and a middle. There's three elementary schools, a middle, and a high school has popped up. But again, this is all conceptual, and mm-hmm. we'll all be long gone by the time that's populated. But it just showed me the disconnect. Not the disconnect, but even though it was conceptual, it was, as a liaison, I was able to bring something back to him, and I dropped that packet off with him. So as those things come up, I will keep you all informed.
And I suggest we keep an eye on Ellesmere in terms of growth in the future.
All right. Anything else?
I just have one other. The school board's association resolution. Is this what they are promoting all over the state and trying to get the legislature and these items to do this?
That is not the one you're looking at. I believe is the Greater Florida Consortium of School Boards, and that's Pinellas, Sarasota, Charlotte, Lee. The map shows you Indian River, St. Lucie, Palm Beach, Broward, Miami-Dade, Monroe, and these. Together, they have about 42% of our students.
And I guess the other question, as far as our school board association goes, are they continuing with their lawsuit to try to eliminate the scholarship program?
Yes, they are. They are continuing with the lawsuit. And I forgot to mention this. There was another attachment that I did address, and this really went with the comment on leverage. This is the resolution on assessments and accountability. And, you know, this isn't fluff. I know sometimes when we look at resolutions, we ask ourselves, you know, what is the purpose of this document? Personally, I would not have wanted this to be in the form of resolution, but if you take the time to read through this document, it articulates point by point some of the concerns throughout the state around assessment and accountability, and on the back, the dotted items have suggestions for our legislators. This is this was approved as an FSBA platform. Its intent is really to be informational, and you know, you might go through it and decide, you know, I agree, disagree with some of those items. That's not something that we're going to be asked to sign off on, but I just brought it to you as informational because I will be sharing this with parents as I am able, because it does kind of share what those concerns are.
I'd say also is in line with some of our next steps that we talked about this morning in terms of, you know, legislative. And I also wanted to say that the Superintendents Association and the calendar year in terms of Labor Day, what the statute now says is you can't start 10 days, can't start before 10 days prior to Labor Day.
10 school days, 14 calendar days.
So because Labor Day falls so late this year, that's the problem. So what we're asking them to is to get that out of legislation. And the Superintendents Association is working on that as well.
All right, nothing else before us. We'll stand adjourned. 4 o'clock.
Executive session. 4 o'clock.
No, I can get that if you want.
He's got tons of them.
Hey, Mrs. Ward, how are you?
Not Mrs.
Oh, Mrs. Ward.